This is a Kirkendall Barrett presentation, darling.
Feed me, meow, meow, meow.
Because of this podcast, I'm a gay icon.
I'm so hot. I'm so good looking. My salad dressing is amazing.
Like the internet at large, there are things you can do on the internet besides porn, but most of it's porn.
A lifetime of Hallmark.
Well, hello, everybody. It is your favorite day of the week. It is time for another episode of A Lifetime of Hallmark, where we talk about your favorite movies on both Lifetime and the Hallmark Channel and try to make sense of them. I am Les Kirkendall Barrett. Hello, Jason Bowers.
Hello, Les Kirkendall Barrett.
And hello, Kurt Fitzpatrick.
Hello, Les Kirkendall Barrett, and hello, Jason Bowers.
And happy Solar Eclipse Day.
Yeah, same to you.
Yeah, thank we had you. a little bit of that. We had an earthquake here on the East Coast. You missed out on that.
I heard of
yep.
that. On the day that you had an earthquake on the East Coast, here in Los Angeles, we had hail.
We did?
I think
yeah,
that was
we had hail last week. Later.
I didn't see the hail.
Oh, wait, no, last Friday. Last Friday we had hail. The earthquake was last Thursday, right?
I don't remember.
That sounds about right.
I think the earthquake was last Thursday, and last Friday, I get my hair done at this guy who does dreadlocks in Venice, mm-hmm. and I was driving to Venice, and I hear like this bing, 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 and I'm like, what the hell is going on at the top of my car? And it was hail.
Yeah.
That'll mess up your car. I was where was I? Calgary? I think it was in Calgary during the summer. And hail started coming down. These were pretty substantial balls falling.
And the weird thing is it was like, you know, it's
Jason
been kind of
talking about.
It's been uh-huh. kind of cold. But last week for like last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, it was like bitingly cold in April.
Hey, that's going to be made into a soundbite, me saying there were substantial balls falling down.
Absolutely. Kurt knows because my eyes weren't on the video chat. They were clearly looking at and typing something. I was taking notes as to where that was in the recording.
You can't see it at home. He lit up as soon as I said that. I was like, too late. But this earthquake, I heard from people I do podcasts with. So I heard from Jason. I got messages. I guess people thought I had fallen down a crack in the earth. Like, are you all right?
What, they were calling to check on you?
Are you all right? Like, get out of that crack in the earth and watch this seven movies for the podcast. Get out of there.
Now, it was centered in Jersey. Was it near you?
People around here, I'm in South Jersey. I just didn't feel it where I was. But the people around me apparently did a little bit. There was some chandeliers shaking.
Well, and it's... I was talking about this last week. I don't know if I would want to be in New York City during an earthquake.
No, same. Not built for it.
Right.
No, not built for it at all.
No, because don't buildings in San Francisco have wheels on them?
Here in LA.
And here in LA too.
It's not really wheels, but they're basically the way they build the foundation is to give it room to sway.
Yeah. Okay. It's the same here in LA.
But I've been in New York where I've been in skyscrapers and the wind is moving those buildings. You can look out the window and you see the buildings swaying back and forth.
Yeah.
Because Jason, were you here for the Northridge quake?
No, that was literally the day I decided to move to LA.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yikes.
So I was here for the Northridge quake and that was, I think, like a 6. And whole apartment buildings fell.
Yeah.
Like I had plenty of friends who were made homeless because their apartments were destroyed in the earthquake.
Where did you live at the time? We're in LA.
Now they got checks from FEMA. So it was like, you know, they weren't like screwed over.
Did FEMA exist then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, when was this?
A lot of people I knew got FEMA checks.
Okay. I thought they thought they formed FEMA during one of the hurricanes.
Maybe it was a hurricane. Maybe it was a hurricane like in the 90s or something, but there was definitely FEMA because I knew people that got FEMA checks because that's how a lot of my friends who were made homeless, that's how they got the down payments for their next apartments was because of their FEMA checks.
Now, what year was this? Was that
earthquake? 94.
Yeah.
94. Okay. Because there was one in the 80s, right? In like, was it? Yeah, there was one like the late 80s that was like a huge earthquake that hit LA.
I wasn't there for that. Yeah, I was there for the Northridge because I lived on Sweetser. I lived on Sweetser and DeLongpre.
Okay. Hmm.
Sounds tasty. Sweetser. There was some kind of meme for this earthquake where it was like a bunch of beach, not beach chairs, but like plastic chairs around like a plastic table. And one of the chairs, is falling down and it says, "We will rebuild."
Mm-hmm. That's funny. But yeah, well, by the way, I guess congratulations is in order too, because wasn't today supposed to be the rapture?
Was it?
Was it?
Yeah, okay. People were saying today was supposed to be, because it was solar eclipse day, today was supposed to be the rapture.
Okay, so who gets congratulations for this?
Well, we're still here.
Us for not dying in the rapture.
Oh, okay. I'll take it. I was wondering if I was going to get congratulations.
Yeah, we're still here. We're doing a podcast. We're still here.
That's true. Yeah. But, and we're still in show business. That's even harder than surviving a rapture.
Yeah, it is.
On some level, we're surviving show business and the rapture.
And the rapture. And I got to tell you, I have thoughts and opinions about this movie.
Do you?
Oh,
I do.
I get the sense you didn't like it.
Okay. This was one of those movies where, for all of its flaws, I still was actually entertained by it.
Same.
Okay.
And there were some holes in this movie.
But it was based on actual events.
Yes, I saw that. So it was basically like ripped from the headlines.
So that makes me wonder, like, this clearly happened in some form to somebody. So were they just really dumb, or is this movie dumbing them down for the sake of moving the story along?
No, I think the people were really dumb. I have heard of this happening. I never heard details, but I have heard of this happening before.
I can't imagine.
You know who it wouldn't happen to, Les?
Black China. So, Kurt, do you have any Black China news?
Doing a piece of China.
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 I'm talking China.
The Black China Report. Here's Kurt Fitzpatrick.
So, Maya Angelou once said, "History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived. However, if faced with courage, need not be lived again." So today we're going to get into the history of Black China.
First of all, I love that we're going to hear about Black China and Maya Angelou in the same sentence. Wait.
From now on, I think we should just get rid of actual Black China news, and every week we intro it as Black China news, and then Kurt just reads a quote from Maya Angelou. Okay.
I was just setting the stage as we're going to learn about the history of Black China. There's no real current news.
Okay.
Maya Angelou will be proud of the story. This is from Yahoo News Singapore. This is back from September 2018. A Black China forgets to wear a bra, inadvertently frees the nipple.
What does that have to do with Maya Angelou?
Maya Angelou is telling you how important history was. And now this is the history of Black
China.
We're
learning from history.
Okay. Yeah.
That's right. Okay. All right. So this weekend, it was the weekend of September 2018, Black China survived a major wardrobe malfunction while in West Hollywood. She wore a deep V dress without a bra, and when she turned to face the photographers, her nipple popped out ever so slightly.
Did it say where she was in West Hollywood?
No. The rest of the outfit, which included a Gucci belt, tights, and black leather pumps, was totally fine, and it looks as though the wardrobe malfunction didn't faze her. She even posted a pic of the outfit on Instagram today with the caption, "Ha," which could be her making fun of her own slip. TBD. What does that mean?
To be determined.
To be determined. Okay. Well, it's not like China's a newbie to revealing and daring looks. They basically become a trademark. For example, she wore this outfit out in London in late August, where you could see her breasts and underwear through the fabric. I have the picture here. She's like, it's hard to describe. Maybe like a fishnet kind of thing. And yeah, you can see through it. Yeah. She's got greenish hair. This picture, it was definitely one of the historic looks. Yeah. And that's basically it. That's the whole article. So I know it's a little short, but I think it packs a wallop.
Well, only because you prefaced it with the Maya Angelou quote.
Yeah. I had to pad it a little bit.
I was like, Maya Angelou?
Yeah. Well, hopefully there's some new Black China news coming out, because I look for news in the last 24 hours, last week, and it's just this old stuff is coming up. She
well, everybody recent. Everybody has a slow news week. You know. Yeah,
it's been a couple weeks though. She's got to get back on it. Usually she picks up again and stuff starts happening again.
Yeah, well, you know, is it near one of her kids' birthdays or something? Or
it looks like at the nighttime.
Maybe.
I'm looking at the photo. I can't quite tell where it is, but this looks like it might be the corner of Melrose and San Vicente. So maybe Catch or one of those places.
She's probably going to Jaconi's.
Or Jaconi's or I'm sorry?
Oh, you actually found the picture?
Yeah.
And you could figure out where that is?
Okay. It looks familiar, but it's pretty dark in the background, so I can't quite tell for sure. But also, though, the photo credit is Backgrid. Which means Black China called the paparazzi to come photograph her.
Oh.
Okay.
Hey, well, a girl's got to do what a girl's got to do.
Yep.
That's her operation.
Yeah.
Blackbird.
Well, not hers. It's anytime you see that as a photo credit, it usually means that it's a celeb paying somebody to make sure that they're in the press.
Oh. Yeah. I didn't know that. Okay.
Well, you know, good for her. She's an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So that's that.
Oh, Jason and I were talking the other night, and we were talking about this place called Manhole.
Maybe you should have this conversation. Maybe I don't need to be a part of this particular conversation. This could be something you guys can have on your own.
There's a bar in West Hollywood called Motherlode, and they used to do a big night on Tuesdays called Manhole until they were allegedly sued and had to change the name because there was another bar somewhere else in the country that also had a night called Manhole. So then they changed it to the seemingly more violent sounding Invade the Hole.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Jeez.
Were you going to ask Kurt something about this, though, Les?
Yeah, and then also, because the way it came up, too, is we were talking about Manhole, and I was telling Jason that's where my husband and I, we went on our first date to Manhole.
Right. That was the question?
No, the question, I think the question was, would you go to a bar called Manhole?
No. That's my warning not to.
He was angry that you even asked him the question.
I know, right? What if there was cake at Manhole?
Oh, see.
Sounds like a trap.
There shouldn't be cake at Manhole.
No, I don't.
Full stop.
There's cake next door to Manhole, or like a couple of doors down, because it is near the Abbey.
Manhole. I think, you know, that's telling you what you're gonna get. So I'm not going to the place called Manhole. Even a place called Womanhole would kind of disturb me a little bit as well. I mean they don't have to be so abrupt.
So yeah, that's because, yeah, we were talking that Jason's like, why haven't we talked about this on the podcast? And I was like,
the fact that you went on your first date to Manhole is very funny to me.
Manhole.
Yes.
Is it a classy place or does it pretty much live up
to its name? No, it's not classy. It's not like dirty, but it's not classy.
It's a bar that's already considered kind of divey, gets a little dirtier.
Maybe I would.
And it's on a Tuesday.
What are we talking about? This manhole, though. So it's mostly gay oriented, or
yeah.
Oh yeah, with a name like manhole.
That's why it's not called lady hole.
Well, I said it. No, I don't know about that name is what either, but yeah. Okay. It's just jarring. That's what it is.
Imagine going there.
Well, I don't know what to do.
And then it's renamed as Invade the Hole.
Right.
Oh, my God. And they're getting away with it?
Well.
I guess so. Yeah. Who's going to say anything?
Well, if you hear the name of the bar, you know, like.
Yeah. I just like that they had, like, road work signs made that said Invade the Hole. Like those orange signs with black lettering.
They did have those orange signs there. Yes.
Sounds.
And like construction hats and stuff.
Yeah.
Obtrusive. I think that's the word. We're looking for obtrusive. Not altruistic. That's not the right word. Destructive. So, I can't think of the word I'm thinking of. But yes. No, that sounds like a place that I probably shouldn't go. I'll go with you. So if you guys, when I come out there, I'm open to anything. Well,
I can't wait.
Let me back up a little bit on that. I'm definitely open to going to these places.
All right.
I can't wait until you come out here.
Take him to the Eagle, Les.
Yes, we'll take you to the Eagle on Rue Paulmay.
We could have a full episode just discussing that.
Afterwards. Right. Anywho, okay. Well, let's talk about this movie, Million Dollar Lethal Listing.
Oh, is it? Shit, I watched the movie Million Dollar Baby, the Clint Eastwood movie.
Oh, well, that's going to be very different in your recap.
No, I'm just joshing. I did get I watched the correct movie.
So now you guys know that there's a show on this. So the title of this movie is The Takeoff. There's a show on Bravo. It's a reality show called Million Dollar Listing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And there's Million Dollar Listing New York. And there's Million Dollar Listing LA. But this is Million Dollar Lethal Listing. Now, we talk about the park ranger on this podcast.
Yeah, I heard her earlier.
We talk about the park ranger on this podcast, yes. Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, okay. So, and we know, and lately we've been talking about the park ranger school for acting.
Yes.
Right? So when I was back.
It's probably more of an academy.
School, yeah, an academy.
It's an academy.
It's an institution.
Right. Like Professor X's Academy for Mutants. It's like the park ranger academy for actors.
That's not possible. Them. This trail's been closed for 8 years. It's extremely dangerous.
Exactly.
We're in the resident special skills.
So when I was back
skills.
In acting school,
special
I went
skills,
to the American Academy of Dramatic Art.
What? I got that out. All right. So in their resume, special skills, sitting. Okay.
There used to be, like, at the end of the semester, they had these things called exam play. And so we'd be given a play, and we'd have to do the play, and that was, like, our final test.
The whole play?
Yeah, well, or parts, like sometimes the whole play, sometimes parts of it. This movie was like a park ranger exam play. Because there was all sorts of park ranger acting going on. They were just park rangering it up. Except for the beacon of light in this movie, our friend Meredith Thomas.
Meredith was great. The lead now, in the movie was great. Jack Gay. And Jack Gay's in it.
But that being said, that's what I was going to say. I enjoyed this movie. Mm-hmm. I was thoroughly entertained by it. Jack Gay was in the movie with different hair. Like at first, it took me a minute to recognize her because her hair was different.
I literally stopped the movie and looked up which character she was playing. I'm like, I think that might be her, but I'm not sure.
I recognized the voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Meredith played something that we've never seen before on a Lifetime movie. Mm-hmm. She played a Lifetime police officer who was not lazy, who actually did their job.
Quite the opposite, actually. She's the only one that, like, actually wanted to solve this case the proper way.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like, Meredith went above and beyond. The character went above and beyond.
Oh, Meredith did, too. Yeah. They wouldn't let her do her job.
No.
She's like, I want to work.
No. And
doing their own investigating.
She kind of implied a couple of times that the lead was stupid because the lead would do stupid stuff.
Like, really stupid stuff.
And Meredith would be like, no. Like, she was, I've never seen a Lifetime detective work so hard. Mm-hmm. And normally they're like, okay, so yeah, you know, there's murderer. We haven't caught them yet, but just stay in the house.
Yeah, stay in the same house where you've lived the entire time.
Right.
This one, Meredith is telling her not to go to the house.
Right.
Right.
You know, or like she would do things and then Meredith would be like, what'd you do that for? That was dumb. I told you to not do that. So I was very impressed by that.
Yeah.
She was doing some dumb things.
Yeah. And even though some of the acting was park ranger-ish, I thoroughly, once again, was entertained and enjoyed this movie. Because... and I've said it before, I'll say it again, what saves Lifetime movies every time is they know what they are, they know what they're giving, and they don't try to be anything else but.
I was concerned that this movie might deviate from that, though, because it was based on true events.
Based on true events, yeah. Which boggles my mind.
Loosely based. I mean, how does this happen?
But it has happened. And let's get into it. But I have heard about
this. All right, let's get into this because this is ridiculous.
Kurt, you're in real estate. You've never heard of stuff like
this? Wait, that's right.
No.
You have an expert here.
Well, I haven't been into it. I am a licensed real estate agent in New Jersey.
But this is good, though, because we have an expert. So I have questions.
Yeah.
All right, I'll do my best.
I have a lot of questions. Well,
first question is, why?
Why what?
I don't know. Why'd they make this movie? Why are we here?
So this first part, though.
There you go.
Tell me if this first part is realistic. So we see a house. Yeah. It's empty. It's really nice. Mm-hmm. And we just hear the voices of a man and a woman. And we hear, like, the click of a camera. And they're talking, and they're walking through, and they're commenting like, oh, this is great. Oh, this is nice. Oh, look at this. Oh, and it sounds like they're taking pictures, and they're complimenting, and they're just very happy with how this house looks. Now, is that something that would happen? Like, do you take pictures? Do you case the joint before people come to see it?
Well, I don't know. You don't case the joint. But if you ever look at a house on Zillow, you'll generally see all these pictures from inside the house. So a real estate agency will, like, hire a professional photographer to come in and take all these pictures. And sometimes they'll stage the house, you know, add furniture and things like that.
And it looked like the house was staged. It totally did. Looked like it was staged.
It looked like it was staged, but they were afraid to hang art on the walls.
Yes. So then basically that the last line was, this is going to be perfect. So basically this was our cold open.
Yeah. Which I thought was a red herring. I thought it was just like the real estate agency just taking pictures in the house and that was it. That's what it was going to be. But instead it was just confusing. If you could say that.
Okay. So then we see a man comes home. At first, I wrote the husband comes home because I thought that they were married.
Yeah.
He comes home, and I wrote, he seems disgruntled, which he turned out to be very disgruntled.
Well, he's disgruntled because he's losing all those roles to Gary Cole.
Right.
He looked just like Gary Cole.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Gary Cole's great.
Now, whoever wrote this script has been listening to, like, remember back at when Star Jones was on The View, she'd always go, "I'm a lawyer. I'm a lawyer." Because every other line from this guy was, "I'm a lawyer."
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It is bonkers how highly he regards his status at the law firm over everything else.
Yes.
Like, not like, oh, he's a workaholic, but like, crazy, crazy things happen in this movie because he really wants to make partner.
Yeah, which apparently, can I reveal something?
Yeah.
I can't. Well, he has to pay to be a partner.
Yeah.
What the?
Really? That's why they call it partner. You own a piece of the business. Yeah.
And you have to pay?
Yeah.
All right. I never heard that before. A lot of money.
Because on these shows and stuff, I always thought, like, they're always like, oh, my God, I'm going to make partner. And they're always very stressed about it. I didn't know they had to pay the money.
They pay to buy in to be a partner in the ownership of the firm. And that's why they get their name on the door, because maybe they donated or they bought in with more money.
They own it. Yeah, I guess they should.
So let me make sure I'm getting... But then they have to invite you to pay your money, though, right?
Yes. But the flip side is, once you are a partner, then all of the cases at that firm, even from other lawyers, you're making a sliver of that money.
Okay.
Got it.
It's okay. Basically a legal pyramid scheme, really.
Yeah, it's something weird, because what are you paying into? It's already bought. The law firm already exists.
But you're buying, it's sort of like, let's say Les own a cake shop. And he's like, you know, this has gotten really expensive for me to run on my own. And Kurt, you're like, I'll buy half of that. You're paying him 50% to own half of the business. So then basically when you become partner, they invite you in because they're all deciding how much of a percentage you're going to get of the business.
Got it.
Like, you could become an investor in Manhole.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm not doing so well. Or Invade the Hole, so it's called.
Yeah, Invade the Hole isn't there anymore either. R.I.P.
No.
Oh, whew, thank God, I'm safe.
So disgruntled Tom is very disgruntled.
Yeah.
And his fiance Becca is on a laptop and she's looking for houses. Mm-hmm. And they're planning for their wedding as well. Now, Tom is very condescending. And I didn't know any woman who would have put up with that from him.
Yeah, same.
Because she worked and he even was like being a dick to her about having a job. Because he's like, your full-time job should be planning our wedding.
Planning the wedding and looking for a house.
Yeah.
She's got to find a house, yeah.
And plan a wedding.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. He's got it going on, though. He's got this younger woman who's got money.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because then she goes into work, and this is a very attractive office, by the way. Like, her coworker is very attractive, too. And her coworker is like, you look terrible.
That's nicer.
And the coworker hates Tom. And then they mention the age difference, because there is a big age difference. Tom was at least 20 years older.
You think it was that much?
Well,
he was like salt and peppery, but he wasn't like wrinkly.
Because then I was kind of like, it's a lifetime older person.
Yeah.
So you know how, like, sometimes with a lifetime older person, you don't know how old they really are because everybody's sexed up.
Yeah, I actually, like, the age difference didn't stick out as even being a plot point to me, other than the fact that they pointed it out in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I didn't understand why Becca was even at work. Like, she's not doing any work. She's doing, like, her house hunting.
Yeah. And she's a freelancer.
Right. She's a freelancer. Sometimes you need office supplies and you need better internet. So you go into the office.
Right. She'd use a Xerox machine. She could get that in a coffee shop.
Yeah, but you have to pay. You go to the office, you get free coffee and office supplies.
All right. She's got a scam going there.
Oh, but then her friend, who I guess is also her boss or one of her freelance jobs, is like, hey, you know, you should come and work for us full time. Because whatever freelancing she does, I guess she's good at it.
What does she do?
They never said. They want us to believe that this woman is very competent at her job, and they're begging her to work there, but she's really dumb in other ways.
Yes, really dumb.
So they couldn't come up with a job for her. Okay.
And so, yeah, so the friend Annie is like, yeah, you know, you should come and work with us full time because you're really good at whatever you do, and we like you. And then Becca says, well, no, I can't come work full time while I'm engaged, she doesn't want me to because I got to look for this house. So Becca goes to the house and they quote her the price. And this house is a gorgeous house. And Becca is like, okay, who died here? And the realtor is like, what are you talking about?
She said, where's the ghost?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She thought there was a ghost. Like,
Becca's like, the price on this house is...
They didn't say how much it was.
She's like, for the way this house looks, this is way too low of a price for this house.
Right.
And...
They never said the price of the house, but we'll find out that the down payment on it is $500,000.
Right. Yeah, we learned that.
And the realtor was like, oh, well, okay, so this is an all-cash offer. Now, as a realtor, is this something that happened?
As far as I know, probably not. If the house is like $3 million or something like that, most people don't have $3 million cash.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you'd also have to get a mortgage for that, which is going to be easy, but no, probably not. I mean, I guess you could make that rule, but you're going to be limiting how many people can buy your house.
Because, and when Becca questioned it, the realtor was like, the seller needs cash and he needs cash quick. And then I also wrote here that the realtor was definitely an A student at the Park Ranger Academy.
She's been in multiple Lifetime movies.
Really?
That we've seen, yep.
Oh.
There's a way to get a mortgage, too, where they... I don't remember exactly how this works, but I do know some finance people who are able to make a mortgage into cash somehow. Oh. They make it into a cash offer.
Okay.
But I believe they get paid for doing this kind of transaction, so... But if you're dealing with like a $3 million, I mean, someone buying a $3 million house has got, I assume, has their shit together financially to some extent, so.
And this house definitely would have been like in the millions.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure, for sure.
Yeah. I'm just saying $3 million. I'm just, as a example number. Yeah.
So the next scene, Becca goes and talks to her lawyer, who is Jack Hay.
Mary.
Right. And Jack Hay is talking to her, and Jack Hay is telling her, you need to get a prenup.
Yes, she does. I agree with that.
And Becca's like, I don't want to get a prenup. And Jack Hay's like, but you have inherited some money, and I think it would be better for you to get a prenup. And Becca's like, but that's just showing that we're expecting it to get divorced. And Jack Hay's like, no, it's going to protect you if you get divorced.
I think people should get that, especially if there's money involved. Absolutely.
Yeah. So then they go back to the house. She takes Tom, the cranky boyfriend, back to the house. And they're looking around this house. And Tom is also like, this can't be for real. Like, this, the price in this house is just, like, unbelievable. But they decide to go for it.
Yeah, and we find out that they're buying the house together on paper before they're married.
Yes.
So it makes it a little messier if things split, if they split.
But even though they're buying it together, she's fronting the money.
Yeah, she's fronting the money for the down payment, the cash.
Right, it's inheritance that she got.
And then they're going to, once the down payment is made, then they've got a year to pay the owner the rest of the money by selling their other house.
And that's ridiculous. If they don't pay it in a year, the house reverts back to the previous owner.
Yeah, but that whole situation is ridiculous. Yeah.
So that wouldn't happen.
I don't think so. Well, first of all, they don't hire a title company. There's no title company involved in this transaction. Mm-hmm. So nobody does any research on this to see if any money is owed in the house, if somebody else owns the house, or any, you know, this is all the stuff you would find out. You go through a title company. A title company also usually runs the settlement. They don't have anybody running the settlement. They're having the settlement at the actual house, which is weird. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, there were so many red flags for this woman along the way, and doesn't think it's odd that her lawyer boyfriend is okay with this.
Right.
Shady arrangement.
I mean, when her lawyer, when her real lawyer is like, okay, that's weird.
You could do some kind of private mortgage with somebody without actually having a mortgage, but you better have like a lawyer involved. You better actually, you know, put it all together professionally.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay.
And where was the fucking notary in all this?
The notary too. Yeah.
Where was the notary?
Right. So then they meet with the owner, and the owner is very wacky. He's wacky. He's eccentric. And when Tom asks him, he asks him, why are you doing this? And he's just like, because I need the cash and I need it immediately. And he's very like, about the whole thing. So then, the owner was like, this is basically like a 12-month interest-free loan. So then they move into the house, but it looks like they don't have any furniture. The house, they take the furniture from the house.
Well, so
they're literally just moving in with their bags.
I did question it at first when they walked in the house. I'm like, they're moving in, but there's already stuff there.
Yeah.
And then they were unpacking like they were people in a hotel room on vacation. They kept she's just putting out like little toiletry bottles on the counter. And she's like, oh, I guess I'll take this drawer and just put my stuff in there for now.
And it's a long time.
Of bags.
Well, it was a lot of footage of them putting towels and putting a couple things in a drawer. And they're minimalists. That's what they are.
Yeah.
No, you could have furniture in the house. That could, and they paid a little extra for it for the furniture.
Oh, because didn't they say that he put the cost of the furniture on top of what they already
had. On top of their 12-month interest-free loan.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got some stuff. Well, that happens.
So then they've unpacked. So that night they're laying in bed, and then the foreboding Lifetime movie music goes, da-da! So you know something's going to happen. So then you hear somebody and they're walking through the house, and it startles them awake, and they sit up in bed, and a man walks in with a very ugly shirt, and he says, and they're like, what are you doing here? And he's like, well, this is my house.
Yeah. And why do we never see this gentleman again? This is his house.
The explanation was so dumb to me. that this is his home. They've broken into it unknowingly, and he agrees to stay at a hotel until they get their shit together.
I don't think my brain allowed myself to hear that because it was so ridiculous. In fact, I think you're making that up. They didn't say that.
They did.
Yes, they did. They said that.
They got some nerve.
Because I'd be like, get out of my house. Get out.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll go to a hotel. And is it late at night, too? Well,
yeah.
I guess I could find a room. Do you mind if I you change the Wi-Fi password? I got to get on Expedia and see if I can get a good rate on a room.
Yeah.
Are you guys considering Airbnb? Because I could stay downstairs.
Right.
No, that's ridiculous. They should be ashamed of themselves for coming up with that.
So then the next scene, we see Meredith.
That might be a good sitcom premise.
What?
Somebody like a family, they think they're buying a house, but they're not. And like another family comes in. Hey, this is our house. And the two families have to live together.
Let's write it.
There you go.
I legit love it.
You do?
Yes.
Okay. All right. It's a deal.
How many seasons do you think it would go?
Oh, greenlit. Like at least 7.
So then you have to have like a little kid that like becomes a teenager.
Yeah. We'll get a kid that's.
And then the last season, they somehow get like some little wayward orphan waif to have another.
And they decide to adopt them together as two families raising one child.
Yes. Yeah, and that's how they become. That's like the series finale. Like now,
yes.
Now the two families are one.
There you go. There you go. Look out, Max.
What's Max?
HBO Max. Call me. They call it Max.
Max. Okay. Yeah, that's right. It's called HBO Max. Yeah.
So they go to see Meredith, the detective.
Meredith Thomas.
Yes.
Well, she came to them first.
So at first, I thought that Meredith was going to be a lazy detective because she told her, you know, why don't you just relax and then come by the precinct tomorrow? And I'm thinking, what do you mean relax? She just found out that she's not living, like she's living in somebody else's house. What do you mean relax? but then.
That guy kept a very clean house.
Yeah. I'm sure they cleaned it before.
Oh, okay. Jeez, maybe it was worth it for him then. I don't know.
So later.
One thing that's never explained in this movie is how they gained access to this house to begin with. How the scammers did.
Well, I've heard this. Basically, what I've heard is when people put on social media, hey, I'm going to go to the Bahamas for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They go in while the person's like in the Bahamas or whatever. And so they've basically been like stalking this person online.
Got it.
So they know what the person's doing.
If anybody's falling for this, I've done stupid things, but oh my, that takes the cake.
Yeah.
If you're buying a house that somebody else, that's from someone who's on vacation.
Kurt, the phrase, because you love cake so much and because we're creating this sitcom together, that needs to be the catchphrase of one of the characters. That takes the cake.
That takes the cake.
Or maybe that's the title of the show.
Yeah.
That takes the cake.
That takes the cake.
I like that.
Long though.
So who's gonna be in it? Like Tony Danza?
Tony Danza is like 70 what? Something now.
Who's gonna be in it? Like Tony Danza could be like grandpa.
Well, I think we could be in it. We could give roles to ourselves.
Of course.
But I'm not sure how it's all gonna work out yet. Probably I could be one of the husbands. We've discussed Drew Barrymore as a possible partner for me. We could start her out as like an in a, you know, she could be my wife in this.
Okay.
And that could be kind of cool because it's like, you know, like with a little kid, Drew Barrymore could be like, Pee-wee, did you get into the soap again? Did you put too much soap in the dishwasher? And there's like a bunch of like soap suds in the kitchen. And then Kirk comes in and goes, that takes the cake. And then you have to pause for audience laughter.
Oh, yeah.
Or he'll go, that takes the cake. And then the audience is like, woo!
And like you have to heavily mug at the camera. Like Norman Fell level mugging when you're holding for your laugh.
That's right. Well, we both went to Temple University, so.
Who, Norman Fell, Mr. Roper?
Yeah. I went there as well. Know that. So we're on the right track here with this. Okay. No, I don't have to be in it. But the idea is there. I think it's a good thing.
Okay. So they go looking for the real estate agent, and they can't find her.
Okay.
Like, Becca does. Becca goes to the real estate agent, and she can't find her. She even goes to the real estate office, and the people at the office are like, I don't know who you're talking about. And everybody is very mellow about this whole thing, and they're basically gaslighting her because they're treating her like she's overreacting. When she's like, what do you mean I'm overreacting? I gave $500,000 to somebody to buy a house.
Well, who else do you think was gaslighting her? Like, Tom definitely was, but I didn't think anyone else was. I think everyone else thought Tom was a loser.
I just thought in the beginning, everybody was like, very mellow about the whole thing. Even in the beginning, Meredith was very mellow. She explains herself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It also seems like, and this is happening in this real estate office, it seems like they're trying to pass time. Like, well, we got 15 minutes for the next plot point. I mean, let's stretch things out a little bit. Well, I'm not sure I know who she is. Maybe I do. Let me go check with the person in the office. You don't have to do all that.
Yeah.
And even like her friend was like, you know, instead of being she was kind of sympathetic, but she's like, well, maybe this is the universe trying to tell you something.
She's got like, the real eclipse is her throwing shade on her on Tom all the time.
Like, right. Damn. So then she goes to the realty office and the person is like, no one like that works here. And she shows her a picture and she's like, well, hold on a second. And she goes into the office and then she comes back out and you know it's not good when she's like, the manager wants to talk to you. And by the way, she used to work here, but her name was Mia. And so we find out that the realtor is really named Mia, and the realtor was fired for illegal practices.
They never actually said she was fired. They danced around that deliberately.
Mia, but her name was Mia. So then she goes back to Meredith's office again, and Meredith explains herself, and she was like, well, when I said for you to go home and relax, I meant it was 6 in the morning at the time, and there's nothing that we could do at 6 in the morning, but I didn't mean for you to just drop it. I just thought that you'd come back later.
I thought you would enjoy luxuriating in the house, which you now know you don't own, but the owner let you stay in anyway.
Right.
How kind of him.
And then Tom told Becca that he went to talk to Meredith, and Meredith is like, Tom never came and talked to me. And Becca's like, well.
No, if I was staying in the house and the owner doesn't even want to stay there, I was like, what's wrong with the house? Does it have black mold? Does it need an exorcism? is there something really wrong with the house structurally?
Right. But then Tom is like, so Becca's like, Tom, you lied and you said that you went and talked to Meredith. And Tom's like, I went to the police station. And then Becca's like, no, you didn't, because I went and talked to Meredith and Meredith told me that you didn't go to the police station. And then he just starts, he then gaslights her again.
Yeah, I actually put in my notes at this point that this is the gaslightiest Lifetime movie ever.
Because he totally just did it. Like, I didn't think twice about it. And then Tom is like, well, you know, we shouldn't go back. We shouldn't go after them anyway, because I'm a lawyer.
It was so funny how many times they said that in this movie.
I'm a lawyer. He's like, and if we go after them, word is going to get out that we were duped, and that's going to make me look bad. And if I look bad, it's going to make my firm look bad.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, totally ridiculous. And then Becca is like, you're worried about looking bad? All of my savings is gone.
Like, oh, and your savings, huh? Your savings. You're holding it over my head.
And then Tom is like, look, I'm making the decision and we're not going after them. And that's all I'm going to say about it.
Well, no, he also said, I'm going to make enough money in the first year of working as a lawyer. I'll make that $500 back.
Right.
And she could have said, well, weren't you going to make that money back anyway? We still lost $500,000.
Yeah. Right. Of her inheritance.
And also, I don't believe that. If the buy-in to become a partner is $500,000, which we'll find out later in the movie, that right. you're telling me that you're going to make that money back in your very first year as a partner? What right. kind of money is this firm generating? Because right. their office looked like it was in an alley.
So I have a question for you guys. Did you notice when she was in the office talking to the the receptionist for the realtor?
Yeah.
Did the receptionist, she wrote something down on a piece of paper, right?
No.
Not that I remember.
No. She clocked out of the corner of her eye the door code.
Yes. Seemed really obvious. Yeah, that door code.
1313.
Yeah. They hung this law office, which makes enough where Tom's going to be making 500K his first year, has the security door code on a post-it at the front desk.
1313.
Yeah. Like the Munsters.
Yeah.
And then Tom was like so condescending. He was like, can't you just do what I tell you to do? And it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, dude.
No, you mentioned the Munsters. That always reminds me of that scene in the Munsters where they're trying to delay Herman. So they're saying, no, Herman, would you like something to eat? And he goes, well, actually, I'll have a hot fudge sundae. So then the next scene is like a time lapse. He has like 12 hot fudge sundaes he's eaten. And then he goes, well, I have to go home now for dinner. All right, just had to get that out.
So then Becca and Tom have a fight and she's like, why don't you leave? And Tom is like, don't tempt me. And he was such a loser, she should have been like, good, just go.
Yeah.
So then Becca then starts spying.
Yeah.
And she sees Mia leave her house. And then Becca goes into the house and she starts snooping around. And while she's snooping, Mia forgot something back at the house. So Mia goes into the house.
It's ridiculous.
And Becca hears her and hides.
But the hiding really well as she opens the door. It's like she's like a game show prize.
I laughed so hard at this moment because right after that, Samantha or Mia just very calmly says, "You need to leave." And then Becca just like starts to nonchalantly walk out, like, "Okay, caught." And then it's like, "Wait a second here."
People's sense of home here is weird.
I paused and laughed for like 2 minutes after that. Spectacular.
And then Becca's like, "Why'd you do it?" And then Mia first, what is she like, "Do what?" And Becca's like, "The $500,000.
Oh,
you know
that?
I'm here.
Oh, that.
She's like, "You know why I'm here. $500,000.
And then she sits down, and then it's like a therapy session.
And then Mia's like, the less you know, the better. And then Mia's like, "Becca, you need to let this go." And Becca's like, "Wait, so I need to let $500,000 go." And then she asks about Riley. And then Becca then goes back to see Meredith, and she tells Meredith about Mia.
But doesn't tell Meredith, like, she's sort of kind of trying to get her involved as detective, but is telling her to keep her distance at the same time. It made no sense.
Right. So then we're back at the house, and Tom comes home, and Becca's like, "Okay, so I went to the police," and then Tom's mad, and Tom's like, "You're jeopardizing my career. I'm a lawyer."
What a weird excuse. He could have come up with something better than that.
And then he's like, you know, he's like, "You should," and he's yelling at her. He's like, "You shouldn't have done that." Then we cut to, we're back at Mia's house, and we see Mia, and she's on the ground, and she's been strangled, and she's dead, but she has her hand on her neck, even though she's dead.
Okay.
So yeah. She's laying on the ground like this. And
she was strangled with a scarf, they believe.
Yeah. So Meredith finds her, and the detective like dusts for prints, and there were a bunch of prints on the back door.
But not in the front door where the break-in was.
Right. The front window was broken, but there were no prints.
Which means so Meredith suspects that Becca may have committed this murder.
Ooh. Right. And then Becca tells Meredith, "Well, yeah, I broke in." And then Tom comes and yells at Meredith. And then he plays the lawyer card, because I'm a lawyer, and she's not going to talk without, I'm her lawyer. And they walk out, and Meredith tells her her fellow police officer, she doesn't think that Becca did it. So then, this made no sense to me. They're sitting at home, so then Tom is drugging Becca's wine.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of wine in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're talking, she's drinking her drugged wine, and he's like telling her, and he's like gaslighting her. He's like, "You know, you're the only suspect, and you might end up going to jail, and it's not going to look so good for you."
Yeah.
He's trying to get her to admit that she did the murder.
But then she gets dizzy and passes out because he drugged her wine.
Yeah, did he just want her to go to sleep for the night? Or?
They don't really explain why she needed to be drugged.
Was it Ambien he was giving her?
It was something.
What was he giving her?
I don't know. Capsule of some sort. Okay. But like, yeah, she like it served no. It didn't move the plot along that he drugged her in this moment. Because the next thing he goes and does, he could have done it when he claims he's at work.
Right. Because then he went to see Riley. And Tom is pissed because Riley killed her. And he tells Riley, "Get out of town." And Riley's like, "Well, I don't have any money." And then Tom takes out a big wad of cash and gives Riley the money. And he's like, and then Riley's like, well, I need to go to my place and pack. And Tom is like, no, you can't go there. And he's like, is that the thanks I get? I kept you out of jail and you botched it. And then he was like, you sucker punched someone in a bar fight. And I'm a lawyer. Like, he just says that again. Like, I'm a lawyer.
You passed that bar exam, man. You just want to brag about it all the time.
Yeah.
And then.
Hope he doesn't start CrossFit, too. I'll never shut up about that.
Right?
Right.
Then Tom tells Riley to watch his tone. And Riley was like, you can't handle your wife, so you're not going to handle, you're not going to handle me. And that triggers Tom.
Yeah.
And Tom then strangles him.
He knows what he's doing, too, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then Becca wakes up the next day, and she looks like shit. And she's like, I feel like I've been drugged.
She's been wined and drugged.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Tom does what you shouldn't do to a hungover person. He dumps her. And then I like the fact that she didn't take it lying down. And she's like, my friends warned me about you. And he and his, well, guess what his comeback was? I'm a lawyer. I got to think about my career. I can't have a wife who's a murder suspect.
We're a supportive husband.
So then she does what you should do when you need to be cheered up. She goes to see Jack Hay.
I wish we could all do that. We're having a day. Right?
Like, you're both
Jackie,
like,
ooh. Also, she told, before she went to visit Jackie, she's like, I'll move out. Why are you, you're the only one that's put any money into this home that you found. Why aren't you making him move out?
Right.
Well, one of them are supposed to be there. It's not their house anymore.
Yeah, there's that too.
Come on. She's the one that makes sense. I'm moving out. Where are you going? I don't live here.
Right. And at this point, I'm like, Becca is dumb. Cause yeah, you make him get up. You get your stuff and go. Since you're dumping me,
I'm leaving. Do you have the owner's phone number? I want to call him and see if he recommends that hotel he's staying in.
Right. What,
something didn't even dawn on me until right now is not only is it silly in terms of a plot point to have the owner just be like, yeah, I'll go stay at a hotel. It's also like making it much easier for them to like claim squatter's rights. He's just exactly, letting them stay there.
Exactly. Because actually you're at, I think one of the rules, like if you're at a house for a certain amount of time,
it's over 10 days.
If you get mail at a house, you don't have to go.
Oh
yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, if you get mail, then you are considered a tenant. So she goes and sees Jack Hay, and Jack Hay's like, so, girl, I tried to tell you.
Yeah.
Do not buy the house with him. Because now that you bought the house with him, he's entitled to money from the house.
I got a little confused about her explanation there.
I think I had trouble following it too, but I basically think what it is since even though that was her cash initially, since they bought the house as a transaction together, the money is now part of that estate. And so therefore right. It is not liquid cash. She can just pull out and say, oh, it's actually mine. It's now theirs together.
Because his name is on the mortgage as well as hers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So since they mortgaged it together, even though she used her money, his name is on the mortgage. So it's considered his property too.
Okay. That's not right to me.
Shouldn't be that
way. Okay.
It shouldn't, but I think legally it's correct.
Yeah.
So then she's talking to her friend Annie, and Becca is like, you know, it doesn't make sense. I don't get why he did that.
They're having more wine, too.
And then her friend is like, well, do you think that Tom could be involved in the scam?
You know, her friend's house looked an awful lot like the other house they were in.
Yeah.
So then this random thing becomes important later, but I still don't get why they did it this way. She's sleeping at her friend's house. She wakes up the next day. Her phone needs to be charged. She goes into a drawer to get a charger and she sees a stun gun.
Like a zapper. Yeah. That's like the only thing in the drawer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she goes to her friend and she's like, why do you have a stun gun? And her friend's like, duh, I'm a woman who lives alone. Of course I'm going to have a stun gun.
Why didn't you understand why they did that way?
Well, no, it ends up being used.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why she's like, since it was like at Becca's house, she's like, oh, a stun gun.
I think that was literally them just trying to hit the audience over the head with two things at once. Hey, if you're single and alone, you should probably protect yourself. But also, this is going to come in handy later in the movie.
A public service message?
Yeah.
Yes. So then Becca's like, well, I'm going to go to Tom and I'm going to ask him if he's involved. And so she goes to Tom's office, which they'd been dating for how long and they were engaged for how long and she'd never been to his office before. She goes to his office and the assistant or the receptionist has no idea who she is.
To be fair, I think she has been there in the past, but the receptionist was new.
Okay. And she's like, well, oh, and then she asks to see Tom and he's like, well, who are you? And then he mentions, well, I've seen Tom with his wife. And we find out that the person who he thinks is Tom's wife is Mia. So then
this is where she gets the code too.
This is 1313. And she goes and she uses the 1313. Oh, she gets Annie. And Annie, she's like, okay, Annie, we've got to find Riley. So she takes Annie, they sneak back into Tom's law office. They're snooping around. They're looking for, and they finally find Riley's paperwork. But then the janitors come in, and so they hide, and the janitors do, I guess that's supposed to be a comedy scene.
Was it? Boy, you're being kind.
And they would call it the Keystone Mops.
Because the one janitor's like, clean this floor, and then the other janitor's like, do I have to? They're not going to notice. Can I do it tomorrow? And then the other janitor's like, well, okay. And then they left.
I thought it was good work ethic. The guy said, the one guy says, well, they won't notice. The other guy says, that's not the point. You still have to clean it. So I was like,
Ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum. So Kurt, do you think that these were friends of one of the directors or something?
Yeah, but not anymore.
Oh, wow. Oh, shit.
So then they find the files and they're looking and they find Riley's file and they find out that Tom got Riley off for murder. And then Annie and Becca are like, we need to go to the police. So they go to the house, and then
Well, now they're looking at the computer. The two ladies, I guess they had to have varieties of way they were sitting, because they're always hanging out together. Now they're like lying on the bed like teenage girls at the computer.
Yeah.
You have any records?
they zoom out and there's like husband. A picture of Justin Timberlake with a really curly hair on the wall.
Right. And sync.
That Corey Feldman is hot.
Oh, so then they go to the house, the door's cracked open, they go upstairs, and Riley's dead. So then they go to Meredith, and Meredith is like, you dummies, you should have told us what you were doing.
Yeah, because now like, you've been at the scene of two murders.
Two murders. Like, your fingerprints are everywhere. So then they're back at Annie's house, and then Meredith comes over and is like, guess what? We found your money. And you're going to get it back.
And well, that's not true, because we had heard from the woman posing as the realtor that she got part of that money. So what about that?
No, oh, she's right. Due to get part of it, but they haven't gotten paid yet.
She didn't get it. She didn't get it yet.
She didn't get paid in Riley. She didn't get her cut yet.
So yeah, so Meredith is like, you're going to get your money back. We're going to do like a wire transfer. So all you need to do is go to your bank. And they're waiting for you. It's all set up and it's all ready to go. Nice. So then Becca goes and gets Jack Hay, and her and Jack Hay go to the bank and they do a wire transfer, and Tom is watching them. So they do the wire transfer and she's like, thanks, Jack Hay. And Jack Hay's like, ooh. So then they go back to Annie's house. And aren't they drinking wine again?
Yes. Lots of wine. Look through the bottles.
Because they're happy.
I'm starting to think Tom's not the problem in this relationship.
No.
Oh, she's an alcoholic.
And then she's like, the drinks are on me because I got money back. And so then the doorbell rings, and then Tom bursts in. And he grabs Annie, and he's like, you better get me the money or I'm gonna kill her. And then he talks about being a lawyer again.
Oh wait, I know what it was. Annie and Becca years ago started a drinking game. Anytime Tom says I'm a lawyer, they have to drink a glass of wine.
Right. It's funny, because he has Annie by the neck and he's all, I'm a lawyer. And he's like, that's the whole reason why I did this in the first place, because I'm a lawyer. And then this is where we find out that
she's trying to move.
She's going
to
be partner and what she needed the money to buy.
She's trying to get to that wine, too, when he's saying that. She's moving. He said, stop moving.
Right. So he needed the $500,000 to buy into the law firm. So he's like, give me the account number right now. So then Becca starts writing it down, and then Annie punches him, and then Becca gets the stun gun, and she stuns him, and he dies, right?
No, he's just out.
Okay.
A stun gun doesn't kill you. It just, like, knocks you out, and then he gets to rest.
He's knocked out, and then Meredith shows up. And then at the end, Beck is in Jack Hay's office, and Jack Hay's like, ooh, you know what you could do? You could get all of his money. You could go after his assets. You could do blah, 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 blah. And then Beck is like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm happy with what I have.
The lesson of the movie is don't be a gold digger.
Right. Yeah. The end. And that was it.
It must have been a man must have wrote this who was really making things financially advantageous to men. Like, show the woman that she shouldn't sign the prenup, then show her that she should not try to get any money from the man.
And so it's funny. On paper, I shouldn't have liked this movie, but I enjoyed it.
While I missed the presence of black hoodies and chloroform, I loved it.
There was one hoodie.
I really loved this movie.
Samantha, what have you done to us?
When the guy's hanging outside the bank, he had a hoodie on.
Oh, you're right. Thank you, Kurt. Okay. Yeah. I take that back.
Okay, Samantha, I'm sorry. Because, you know, Samantha, like, she has her no hoodie rule, which I think has, like, extended through lifetimes. I haven't seen a hoodie in months.
I think I tolerated this movie. It was okay.
What was Jack A's office in this movie was Vivica's office in the last Wrong movie, and it had that wood paneling that I liked.
Okay.
You know what? I think, and that's what it needed at the end. It was, the ending was kind of like a wrong movie ending where you needed like Vivica to jump in and go, looks like you got the wrong lawyer.
Yeah, because I couldn't get her for this one. I like Meredith. That she's as always as good.
Yeah, no, Meredith was very, like I said, Meredith was, I think, the first Bravo detective that we've ever seen do work.
I mean, a Lifetime.
Yeah.
You said Bravo. I think you meant Lifetime.
A Lifetime, sorry. The first Lifetime detective who's done work.
Bravo.
Bravo is a whole other. Bravo, they'd be throwing the wine at each other.
Yeah.
I don't think there's one show on Bravo I would watch.
What?
There's nothing on it I watch. What's that? Vanderpump Rules and Real Housewives and.
Well, you know what has Bravo on the brain for me is because Million Dollar Listing is a Bravo show. Yeah.
Andy Cohen.
If you really think back, it's wild to me that Bravo started off as like an A&E knockoff. Remember that?
It was like an opera channel.
Yeah.
And guess what their first reality show was?
Orange County?
Well, not so there was Queer Eye, but then you know how like the Housewives salacious type? Guess what their first salacious reality show was?
I don't know.
Real Housewives?
Being Bobby Brown, starring Bobby Brown and Whitney Houston.
I thought that was A&E.
No, Being Bobby Brown was Bravo.
Oh, okay.
And Whitney was high the entire time. Because because you know how you have a catchphrase that takes the cake? Yeah. Whitney for that had a catchphrase, and it was hell to the no.
I also thought it was Bobby. She was always screaming for him. Bobby.
Yes. And all they did in this reality show is just like lived in hotels.
Ooh. Well, maybe someone was living in their house.
They lived in hotels, and they ate.
This is a further extension of this movie. this story actually happened to Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown.
Yeah, that's the true story.
Somebody moved into their house, and they're like, "We'll just stay in a hotel."
It's a tale as old as time.
Yeah.
Well, and then this week, this is a special week on Lifetime. Do no harm. What is it?
I saw a lot of Long Island Medium ads.
I love Long Island Medium. I love Teresa.
Well, now there's like a show that's following her around outside of the.
I know. I watch
the
it.
Room.
I know. I watch it.
God,
I love Teresa.
How can you, Les? I tell you, I don't have it. I mean, to watch stuff like that.
Same.
I just can't
Teresa,
do it.
I like Teresa.
This and like your, I don't know, your 800 pound life and the housewives.
It's 600 pounds.
Oh my God. Good. I'm glad they got it down to 600, but I can't.
It's my 600 pound life. Then there's 1,000 pound sisters.
I don't think I'm a snob. I just don't. It's not in my DNA to watch this nonsense.
There's 1,000 pound sisters. There's 1,000 pound friends. And then the new reality show that I've been watching is Mama June, Family in Crisis.
So see, I sound like a snob because like I watched like, the West Wing.
Because like, Mama June spent all of Honey Boo Boo's money.
Yeah, I heard that.
And I think this is funny. I get that. I don't know. But what happened, Mama June?
Yeah.
Baby June? Wasn't there a baby?
Well, there was Honey Boo Boo.
Gypsy.
Honey Boo Boo.
Honey Boo Boo is Mama June's daughter.
There used to be a woman named Ruby. Remember that one?
Oh, Ruby, yes. And Ruby was like 400 pounds, and she couldn't remember her childhood.
Yeah.
And then Ruby went on Oprah, and Oprah was trying to help her remember. But Howard Stern watches My 600-Pound Life and 1,000-Pound Sisters.
There's this show called 1,000-Pound Sisters?
Yes, and 1,000-Pound Friends.
So each one is 500 pounds?
Close to it.
Okay.
And then with the 1,000-Pound Friends, there's four of them, and they equal out to 1,000 pounds.
If I just put on 310 pounds, maybe 15. I can get my own show.
Well, I was thinking about this because you know, who was it? So like Gypsy Rose Blanchard was talking about how she went and bought a dress from Christian Siriano from some awards thing. And I'm like, so that's all you need to do is like, you know, have your mom like have Munchausen and then you kill her. And then you get like a TV series and you get to afford Christian Siriano dresses.
Oh man.
Yes, basically.
Or the girls on like, the girls on Teen Mom, like all they basically did was they got pregnant while teens and now they're millionaires. Mm. I'm like, that's not a surprising show. Now, if I got pregnant, that would be a show.
Well, write it.
I'd watch that one. That show I'd watch.
Now, if I got pregnant, that would be a reality show.
Yeah. Tough to get a break like that, though.
Yeah, that's, I guess it would be what tough for me to get pregnant.
What a break it would be.
Right?
Well, if it leads to it, you know, it's got to lead to a show. It's a break.
True. Anywho.
We have a lot of show business advice for people.
Right. That's good. If you're a man, get pregnant. That guarantees you a reality show. Well, if you want to find me, you can find me on Instagram at Kirkendall, or you can find me on my website, leskirkendallbarrett.com. Jason.
Please rate and review us on whatever podcasting platform you listen to us on. Give us 5 stars. It helps more people find the show. You can find us all on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Lifetime of Hallmark Podcast. And you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Big Shot Jason. Kurt.
KurtFitzpatrick.com. Now, I'll be performing my solo show, The Jester of All Maladies, at the very first Green Bay Fringe Festival, performing at the Brown County Democrats' offices.
Oh.
This is going to be on Saturday, July 12th at 4 o'clock and 8:30 p.m. And Sunday, July 21st at 1 p.m.
And are you going to be shedding some shelves on the shelf shedding show?
Yeah, when we get around to doing the next one, I got some Scorsese movies to watch. But you can go back and listen to our Oscar episodes.
Uh-huh.
Those are available at the...
How many movies do you have to watch?
Look up Shelf Shedding Movie Podcast. The Scorsese, I guess it was like 6 movies, but I really... I just
six
dragged
Scorsese
my...
movies? You're,
yeah,
you
but I really...
start now.
No, this was like a year ago he gave this to me. I dragged my feet so long.
It'll take you a year to watch.
That's like 12 movies.
I watched The Last Waltz and Silence, which that's a movie that's a tough movie to watch once. I watched it twice. And I have to watch Kundan and I just stopped with that. I just stopped, but I have to start up again so we can have that podcast.
Well, yeah. Tell Jason to find something girly, and I'll come on if it's like something like Barbie or something.
Okay. Jason Bowers won't go on it at all because he doesn't want to watch all the movies.
Or Legally Blonde or something like that.
I just don't want to watch like 6 movies. That's it's tough enough watching 1 movie a week for this show. I don't know how I would watch that many movies and take that many notes.
Yeah, does your hand hurt?
I tell you.
Well,
for different reasons.
I don't, huh? I don't know. I don't think I took that detailed notes when I watched. Because we did like a Paul Newman one, so I watched 6 movies for that. And we did the Arnold Schwarzenegger one. Unless I watched 6 movies for that. So I don't think I took as detailed notes as I take
actually,
for this
show. Tell Jason to find a good makeover movie.
Okay.
I saw a very good makeover montage the other day when I was watching Lisa Frankenstein.
Okay.
Because it's set in the 80s.
Do you want girly movies like Legally Blonde and...
Or Lisa Frankenstein or something like that. Or a makeover movie.
Girls just want to have fun.
Oh, I've seen that. I'd watch that again.
So stuff like that. So, okay.
Yes,
so
exactly. You wanna... Something light.
Okay. Not the movies I'm watching. These are Scorsese ones.
Something light. Yeah, I'll watch six light movies.
Okay.
We get it.
We'll wrap it up.
Anyway, well, we got to go. There's a happy hour. It's happy hour somewhere. So I'll talk to you all next week.
Happy eclipse.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.